Welcome to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast, where we interview our industry's top female executives from Australia, New Zealand, and around the world. I'm Michelle Batsis, your host and the Chief Executive Officer of the Public Transport Association, Australia, New Zealand. We're raising the voices of women for everyone who works in public transport and mobility, and particularly for any of our listeners who are early in their transport careers and looking for inspiration. Each of our guests shares her views on the future of public transport and provides insights into their career journeys. Make sure you follow Women Who Move Nations on your favorite podcast platform and rate the show to help more people find us. You can also join our community on LinkedIn by searching Public Transport Association Australia New Zealand. We're also on Twitter at PTAANZ_, or visit us at www.ptaanz.org. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Batsis, and today I'm joined by one of the most experienced women in transport operations in Australia, and she's also a good friend of mine, Magda Robertson. Magda is currently the General Manager of Torrens Connect, where she looks after the North-South contract, which includes the Adelaide tram network and surrounding bus network. Magda, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
Michelle, thank you so much. What a lovely introduction. It is an absolute pleasure to join you. As you said, we are very good friends, and it is an absolute honour to be part of this. Thank you so much.
Oh, Magda, that's so sweet. I've got to say, it's a complete honour as well for me to interview you, and I'm so excited to get stuck into the discussion we're going to have today. The first thing I wanted to start with is about you and your role that you're doing. So if you can talk to us about the current role you have as General Manager and what your key focus areas are.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously I'm the General Manager of both the bus and trams in Adelaide. One of the key areas for Adelaide at the moment is definitely getting the people out of their cars and onto public transport. So it is a bit of an oxymoron for me because I often say that my patronage levels are definitely back up pre-COVID. So I've got a lot of people and a lot of customer patronage that are, you know, getting on our transport, catching the public transport back into the city. So the challenge that I have is Adelaide has always been a very car-centric city. So you've got a whole bunch of people that are just so used to jumping in their car. And then how do I get around getting that kind of patronage back on the public transport? The other challenge that I have, the other focus areas that I have, I guess, is, you know, around the sustainability. We have a contract that's 8 years plus 12, and we really need to stay sustainable, stay relevant. And I guess it's all about the, you know, adding value to the customer. Keeping obviously our KPIs, keeping the customer value proposition at a level where we get a lot more interaction, we get a lot more traction, we get a lot more patronage. What can we do different for the customer that will, you know, get them out of the car, get them onto public transport, and connect them with other modes of transport? So it's that whole journey plan. I don't think it's something we do great. For example, if you ride your bike to a certain location, you actually can't take your bike on the tram. As a tram user and as a bike rider, you know, there was a certain day where I jumped on my bike and it started raining and I don't have that option. I have to leave my bike somewhere and jump on the tram. So it's just about making a holistic journey for the customer as comfortable as possible with as many options as possible.
Yeah, that sounds great, Magda. I mean, that's what we're really all trying to do, right? To increase the value proposition of public transport. I've got to say, I'm absolutely amazed that you're back at pre-COVID levels on patronage. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you know what? Adelaide really never got hit that hard with COVID. So I remember I moved here during the pandemic, and certainly for the first 2 to 3 months, you know, when you look at the May, June, July of 2020, You know, you felt that there was a lot less people on the trams. We got back to a very normal way of life. You know, when I relocated to South Australia and Adelaide in particular, you know, on the, I think it was back in June, by mid-July, I was going to the movies. So our way of life was very different to the East Coast. Yes, we had a major lockdown in December, which was initially going to be 5 days, quickly put, you know, went down to 3 days. But, you know, all our restrictions, we can dance, we can party, we can go to funerals, and then we can go to weddings, not in that order, obviously. But, you know, our way of life has been very normal compared to the eastern states. So our customers are feeling a lot more comfortable with the fact that, you know, they can get back on transport. You know, the restrictions have been eased. The government has confidence. We're getting very good here at shutting the borders and keeping South Australia safe.
Yeah, it's really interesting reflection, right, around how the perception and safety of the community and the level of COVID transmission really has such an impact on ridership levels. Magda, I've got to say, as you've been talking, it's just so great to hear. You can tell that you just have such great expertise in public transport and the issues you're talking about. And I've got to say, personally, it's so great to see a woman at the helm of such a major operation that you're running in Adelaide. And it's fantastic to, you know, see your leadership in that space. And I think it would be really great for the listeners to hear more about your own career journey. You know, how have you ended up being the general manager of Torrens Connect in Adelaide?
Oh, God. Oh, gee, where do I start? The one thing I'm going to say, which is really fitting leading in from, you know, when we had International Women's Day, quite often people ask me, you know, how do you get to where you get and what have been some of the challenges? What I tend to always focus on is, you know, I've been supported by a group of people, very, you know, managers that have been very good to me, that have been very supportive. And the interesting call out is I've had incredible bosses who happen to be all males, happen to be very comfortable in their own space and their own leadership. You know, there was a time when I was very young and I was in law enforcement and one of the managers came up to me and said, you know, you do have a presence. I know I was never aware of it. And, you know, it's that sort of mentoring that people need very early in their career, because sometimes you're oblivious to your own abilities. I loved my job. Every job I've had, I've loved. I've enjoyed my life. You know, but there's a lot to be said for mentoring and having the right people in your space. So I've been very blessed with people that have really supported me throughout my career. That's not to say I've never had challenges, but, you know, it's within yourself. I always say to people, what you do is within yourself. You make things for yourself. You do what you want to do. You set the goal and you reach for it. I didn't go out into my career thinking I wanted to be a general manager of a transport operations. But it's something that I've really thoroughly enjoyed. Transport is a critical service to the community. And I've just been blessed with really wonderful career and supported by wonderful people. My leadership is a really collective style of having been influenced by a number of, you know, very powerful people. And you take each of everyone and you say, I like the way you do that. I like the way you do that. You know, it is about mentoring. I have a very transformational leadership style. I build high performance teams and I build trust. And it's all those qualities that really, you know, I guess maybe set you apart, because without my team, I couldn't possibly do what I do today. And that's not just the team here in Adelaide, but it's the teams I've managed in Melbourne, the teams I've managed in Sydney. I go out of my way to build trust and really have, you know, just a really high performance team. And I guess finally, you know, you've got to be able to be quite mobile. One of the things I've always said to myself is I'm not going to get boxed into an organization or certainly into a location. So the reason I've been able to, you know, climb up the corporate ladder per se, is that I've been mobile. I've been able to go where the opportunities take me, and I've been blessed enough to be supported by a family that just comes along with me.
Magda, it's absolutely fascinating and so inspiring to hear some of your comments and insights into your professional journey, and actually lays a really great basis for the discussion we're going to have. I'm going to come back to some of your professional journey and leadership stuff a little bit later, but I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about transport now. In particular, you mentioned the word sustainability, and you know that's a word that we hear a lot now. We know there's such a global agenda and movement around decarbonizing transport specifically. Mm-hmm. And I was interested to hear your thoughts on this. I know that Torrens Connect is a joint venture of UGL, John Holland, and Transit Systems, which is part of the C-Link group. And we know that C-Link and Transit Systems in particular have been doing some really exciting work transitioning bus fleets to zero emissions. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, you know, broadly, what are you seeing as the opportunities to improve the sustainability of our cities through public transport?
I think there's a lot of opportunities in that space. Often people talk about, you know, zero carbon or you know, kind of zero emission. I think there's multiple areas of opportunity around this space. Yes, it's about the vehicles, it's, you know, the energy consumption, but it's also about building a city that can be greener, more sustainable. And public transport plays a huge part in this. Take away the emissions and take away the vehicles. We have an opportunity where we can take a lot of people out of cars and put them on public transport. For example, you know, you look at a car, you're lucky if you get one or two people. You know, a tram can have up to 200 people. But beyond that, it's about, you know, getting the government involved in greenifying the city. I mean, if you look what France is proposing in Paris, you know, it's all about, you know, getting the cars out of the city. So one of the areas that we have in Adelaide is Jetty Road. And, you know, I'm a big fan of just getting rid of some of those cars and just greenifying that sort of tram track. And it's about how do we get people to utilize transport, and then how do we build on that sustainability by planting trees or giving people reward points for recycling bottles. We can really do some incredible stuff in that space through loyalty programs. And, you know, I've got a section of the tram track that would benefit from many more trees or many more paths where people can ride their bikes. It's not just about the public transport. We play a big part in it, but it's about the government looking in this at the city, particularly a city like Adelaide, and how do we make it more user-friendly by getting the cars out of the city and getting the people to walk, which is, you know, benefit for their heart and for their health, and less, you know, less strain on the health system. It's a whole circle. It's a whole donut effect that we can really work towards if we just collectively work together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so important, right, to kind of step back that broader picture of sustainability and what it means. And certainly, you know, with COVID, what has been really great to see is that increase in walking and cycling and pedestrianization in cities. And I think we're going to see more of that. Coming back to public transport in particular, though, Magda, I'd love to hear your thoughts on a debate that's been happening across Australia and New Zealand in recent years, particularly given the unprecedented investment that's going into public transport. We're seeing an increasing focus on light rail, and there are different perspectives in the conversation that's going on whether light rail or bus, particularly bus rapid transit, and whether the best solution to move people around our cities is in fact light rail or bus. And I wanted to get your thoughts around how do you think buses can be used versus building more light rail, and how those modes can complement each other.
Well, Michelle, it's like picking a favorite child, and you certainly don't do that, do you?
Exactly. I love that.
I think it's probably a combination of both. I can certainly only speak to Adelaide. We have the Autobahn, which, you know, moves a mass amount of people on track buses. And that is really a very popular system here in Adelaide. It is a system that can get people from, you know, 20 kilometres into the city under 15 minutes. And then you've obviously got the trams that, you know, have a closed corridor, consistent, on time, reliable. So in a city like Adelaide, it is definitely a combination of both. If you look at the, you know, global scale, if you look at Melbourne, Melbourne clearly does trams really well. Sydney, again, I think for Sydney, it's a combination of both. For me, it's difficult because I'm in a city where both modes work really well from one end to the other. So, again, it's like picking kids. I'm not going to pick kids. It's just a matter of more about the connectivity. How do we connect regardless of what mode you're using, how do we connect those modes together for a seamless journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that really is at the heart of it, right? It's about that connection of modes. It's about the network optimization, as opposed to just thinking about the solution, right? So it's, you know, I think it's a really important discussion. I know that the conversation with light rail and bus is going to continue because we have such investment going in. But I think it's really important for people to think about those aspects. Magda, I now wanted to circle back to the conversation we were having around your professional journey, which we were talking about earlier on. And I really wanted to hear more about you. What I think is absolutely fascinating is just your passion and drive. I know you've done very interesting roles in your career, and hopefully we'll unpack that a little bit more as we have this conversation. But I really wanted to ask you specifically around yourself. What is it that motivates you, that makes you tick? What drives you? Because I know that you've got such determination in your career, but also how you're giving back to the community.
Oh, that's a really good one, Michelle. I'm always going to take this back to transport. Transport is a really critical service. You know, when you look at what happened to the world and you look at the pandemic, and I remember being, you know, involved in many discussions very early on back in April last year. And those conversations centered around, you know, what are the critical services and what do we need to keep running? And transport was always in the top five. You know, you had your electricity, you had your waterways. Transport is right up there. So I often say, the thing that really motivates me is this industry. It's bigger than me. It's bigger than anyone that joins this industry. And I always say this to my team, we're part of something that's bigger than you and I. You're part of something that's providing a really critical service to the community, to the nurses, to the police, to the people that really made a difference during COVID. So the things that motivate me is honestly this industry. I love this industry and what it does and how it moves cities and the people. The people that I work with and the people that are out there every day doing the thing that's really needed for the elderly, for the vulnerable. So it's that aspect of this career that I love, that I'm really motivated about. It's bigger than me, and I have the absolute joy in, you know, providing a service to the community. I absolutely love it.
I completely agree, Magda. And it really comes back to the people, right? The people you work with, the people that you serve. I think I've got to say, what is just so amazing and inspiring to hear from you is just how open and honest you are, you know, in sharing your answers and your reflections. I can really tell that you're an authentic leader. Like, I can really tell that about you, which I think is amazing.
Thank you, Michelle.
Yeah, it's so great to be having this conversation with you. And I wanted to ask you, right, because I look at your, you know, look at your CV, I think it's fascinating that you started out in the police force. You've then gone into transport, but you've worked in different cities. You worked at Sydney Trains, you've worked at Metro Trains in Melbourne, you know, you're now in Adelaide. I wanted to ask you, you know, through all of that experience, what's an achievement that you have professionally that you're most proud of? Because I know women tend not to be great at talking themselves up or, you know, kind of sharing, you know, what they've done that's been a big achievement. So this is your chance for a little bit of a humble brag. Can you share with us a professional achievement you're most proud of?
Yeah, I can. And I think it's going to be probably the transition that we did here in Adelaide. I don't know if people are aware, but we were awarded this contract right before the pandemic struck. So back in March 2020, and we had to mobilize a whole transition team and take over the operations on the 1st of July. If you think about the world at the time and some of the critical people that were going to do this job were Sydney based. At one point, I think 80% of our team was Sydney based. And we had to mobilize a whole operation from public to private in a space of 3 months during a pandemic. So I can't stress the magnitude of work that went behind the scenes and everything that we did and the transition team that was here on the ground, which only included one human being from our joint venture. And we, at the end of the day, when it came the 1st of July, we took over operations. We ran the first tram at, 06:11 hours. No one noticed. No one in our community noticed that we were franchised on the 1st of July. We continued the trams. We took over, 92% of staff. So we transitioned 92% of public service staff into a private entity. And we did it in such a way that, it didn't cause heartache for anyone. We were transparent. We were empathetic. We were very honest with how the conversations we were having with our staff and with the client. We based a whole operation on the human factors because these guys knew how to run trams and they were always going to run the trams. We just needed to come and bring them on the journey to join us. And I can't stress the magnitude of work that went to behind the scenes to get this mobilized on the 1st of July. And we did it. And I'm super proud of it. I'm super proud of the team before me, which is the transition team. But I'm super proud of the team that took over on that day and the way we've had it carried it on for 12 months. It's just one of those moments where I think it's a real case study and it's one of the opportunities I'll get to talk to during the Light Rail conference in Sydney.
That is such a huge achievement, Magda. I mean, I've just got to say, right, for customers not to even notice such a major transition is a real credit to you and your team.
Yeah, and some people still don't realise that we've been franchised in Adelaide, and all they're noticing is that it's a little bit better. The customer service is a little bit more smoother. They're noticing the positives, which is really important.
Magda, I think what's actually really important that comes out of what you've said is just that ability to recognize in ourselves what our accomplishments have been and to acknowledge, the work that we've done. And I've got to say, I don't think that this is something that women do particularly well a lot of the time. I know in many of the conversations I've had with women of all ages, of all levels of seniority, many of them say that they struggle with their confidence and particularly this notion of imposter syndrome, right? It's like that voice at the back of your head. And I wanted to ask you, because I know you are confident, right? When we talk, there's a real power to our conversations, right? You stand in your power, which I love. And I wanted to ask you, what's your experience with the confidence, with the imposter syndrome, and what's your advice for building a stronger sense of self-confidence for the women out there listening?
One of the really interesting statistics that I'm fascinated by is if you take a position description, a man will look at the criteria and he'll meet 30% of the job description. A woman will look at a job description and she will look at the criteria. And, even if she doesn't think she meets 70% of those job descriptions, a woman won't apply for the job. Right? Which is such a shame because it's all about you got to fake it till you make it. And I think if a woman has the ability to recognize her own worth, it's all within you and you've got to have that. And, you've just got to have it within you to build your self-confidence up. Like you said, Michelle, I'm one of those people where, I'm not going to let anything stand in my way. Nor am I going to let anyone stand in my way. And when I say that, that's not the ruthless component that I'm talking about. It's if I truly believe that I want something, I'm going to do everything to get it. So one example I'll give you is when I first applied for my job in law enforcement, it was a counterterrorism first response position. And I remember going to this agency, there was a recruiting because it was, they needed about 60 first responders. And I remember a lady coming up to me and looking at me and she goes, "Oh, sweetheart, this is a really hard job to get into." And, you know, and I walked out of there, and this was a woman that said this to me. I walked out of there and I smashed my training. I smashed everything that I possibly could. So when I returned a week later, you know, I was in the top five of meeting my physical fitness test. So top five out of 100 men, I came in with my physical fitness. Don't ever let anyone tell you that as a woman, you're not strong enough, both physically and mentally, to do the job. I will always say this to women. You are physically strong enough, more so mentally. We give birth. We rear kids. We're nurturers. Nurture yourself. Nurture your career, because you're all good enough to get where you want to get.
Magda, I have goosebumps. Wow. I've got to say, wow, I love that. Also, kudos to you being in the top five out of 100, right? I love that.
I smashed it.
It's amazing. I got to say, I totally believe, right, that, you know, I can, you know, go out there and achieve, but I ain't going to be that person in the top five on fitness tests, let me tell you. But you've given me something to work to.
I was 21 though. Let's be honest.
That helps. On this topic, right, because I think it's really fascinating to think about, you know, how do we pitch ourselves to have the opportunities to achieve whatever we want to and to feel that we can compete with men? And I say that not to kind of put us in the paradigm of competition, but obviously there's lots of conversation, right, around equality and parity for good reasons, right? We see that in the stats. I won't go into them now, but there is something that I think I have more and more conversations with females about these days and with peers, particularly as you kind of progress through the ranks, and it's about salary, right? Because we know the evidence shows that women across the board tend to get paid less than their male counterparts for the same role. We know that many companies are putting in really good proactive strategies to address that. But I know that it's something that women still struggle to ask for the raise proactively, right? And I wanted to ask you, do you have any advice for people out there who are wanting to ask for a raise and achieve that pay parity?
Yeah. Know your worth. I know that sounds simple, but it's just know your worth. Google is a wonderful thing. If you don't know your worth, Google it. But on a really honest level, you know, just stand your ground. I had a friend here recently during the International Women's Day, and one of the key things during her speech is never take a pay cut. That really resonated with me. And can I just tell you, the amount of men that have said to me to take a pay cut to progress, to go forward, I've got to go back and take a pay cut. I think, you know, in my career, I've had about five men say that to me. I've never taken a pay cut. Know your worth, negotiate. As a fierce business person, you've got to learn to negotiate. So negotiate, don't stand down. I've been blessed enough to always, you know, do my research I've had a very blessed career. So, you know, my experience is quite easy to leverage when it comes to, you know, salary negotiations. But just don't take a pay cut. Move forward, look forward. Don't drag your colleagues into the argument. It's always got to be about you. The worst thing I can tell you is don't go, "Oh, but David's getting more than me." You're not David. You're someone else. You're someone completely different, someone that's got completely different qualities and probably deserves more. So just know your worth. Don't take a pay cut. Learn to negotiate. If you are the preferred candidate, as a hiring manager, I can tell you, you will get paid what you want if you believe in it. I've been on both sides where I've had to negotiate with my leadership team when they've wanted a pay rise. And as a hiring manager, I can tell you, I respect people that come up to me saying, "This is what I've delivered. This is where we're heading. This is what I'm going to achieve. I'd like a bit of more money." So if you've got a good boss that will recognize that, you'll get the money. If you're a new hire, Just know your worth. Stand by, negotiate, be fierce. Just be fierce and negotiate because you're worth it.
Magda, there's the tagline right there, isn't it? Be fierce, negotiate 100%. Because you're worth it. I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing. It's so useful, right? Because it's a conversation I think a lot of people don't feel that comfortable having, you know? But then as well, if you don't understand what's happening in the market, I think it's challenging to be able to negotiate for yourself.
I love a bit of a negotiation. So I never shy away from it. And I don't think it should be an awkward conversation, to be honest, Michelle. We if you have a family, if you have kids and you've got, pay pocket stuff, it shouldn't be a difficult conversation. And you get to a certain level where difficult conversations are part of your everyday life. So just own it.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. You know, I wanted to go back to something you mentioned earlier, right, where you talked about how you've taken the opportunities in your career by being mobile. You haven't been restricted in terms of what city you've lived in. And I know that you've been, in a fortunate position where you have a family and a support network around you, right, that allows that. But I wanted to ask, having lived in these cities, you've been in Sydney, you've been in Melbourne, you've been in Adelaide. What have you learned from moving for work? And what advice would you have to other people out there who are considering doing that?
Yeah, I would really encourage it because the magnitude of wealth that you pick up, it's absolutely priceless. My first move into Melbourne, I was really green-eyed, bushy-tailed, thinking, yeah, Melbourne does things so much better than Sydney. And it was really interesting because, yes, Melbourne did do stuff different to Sydney, but then Sydney did different stuff better to Melbourne. And it's about bringing that collective experience and taking what's best from Sydney, best from Melbourne, and applying it to somewhere like Adelaide. I would really recommend it if you're in a position, because not everyone is, if you're in a position to be mobile, change cities, change companies, because it just refreshes you. The innovation that Melbourne were using was very different to Sydney, but the way Sydney had down, it had its operation down pat with nearly 2 million passengers every other day. That was really critical experience that I had that I was able to apply to Melbourne, dealing with ill passengers, something that, Sydney did very well. Melbourne was catching up on critical incident management. Each city does its different way. And when you take, if I take my knowledge from Sydney and I take my knowledge from Melbourne, I've been able to apply it to Adelaide and add a lot of value because this city's not used to the experience that I've had. We used to lock down our network for 4 hours because of fatalities, but you can modify that knowledge and apply it to a smaller network. I highly recommend it because what you learn, what you pick up from every different city, you'll never pick up from a textbook. So I definitely would recommend it to people.
That's really interesting to hear, Magda. I think it's something for all of us to think about, right? Because there is so much going on in public transport and obviously lots of similar challenges but different solutions, right? So I think that that's excellent. Thank you so much. I also wanted to ask you, in terms of other advice for people to think about, one of my favorite conversations in this podcast series is I always ask women about their career planning. And in particular, do you have a 5 to 10 year plan, or have you just taken the opportunities as they've come along?
I can probably honestly say I have just, and it's not just, that's really disrespectful, but I have taken opportunities as they presented themselves. I certainly never started my career thinking I'm going to end up in either Melbourne or Adelaide, but certainly, when you look at your life and the trajectory that it takes you on, I'm not one of these people that has a 5 year plan or a 10 year plan, but I'd love a challenge. So for me, it's all about what's new, what's a challenge, what can I do next? I get to that point where I exhaust, I guess it's more about continuous improvement. I'm a bit of a problem fixer. So give me a challenge. I love a challenge. And then I look for other opportunities. It's very different. I have a family. When you've got kids and you've got partners, it's hard to say to yourself, to oneself, I've got a 5 year plan and this is where I want to end up at. It's for me, it's about the day and now, being present, leading the team that I have. So when you do your job and you're present and you're 100% committed, you hope and you certainly wish that opportunities will present themselves. But you've also got to be very careful, because when I say opportunities presenting themselves, so, you know, I've never been that person where someone goes and rings me and says, hey, Mags, I've got a really incredible opportunity for you. Here it is on a silver platter. I can tell you, Michelle, that's never happened to me. So you've also got to be very aware of your landscape and know what's out there and what's happening in transport. Transport is a moving beast. Opportunities are always popping up, and it's a matter of just being aware of the landscape and then thinking to yourself, yeah, I could definitely do that next job.
I love that. I love that. It's really interesting to hear, right? Because I know that some women on this podcast series have talked about having like a really clear plan, but I think it's really interesting, right? Because as you've taken those opportunities, you've moved different cities, you've had different experience. So amazing to hear, Magda. I've got just one last question, and it's a real flow on from this. This is one of my favorite questions, particularly for the listeners we have out there who are in the early stages of their careers. What advice would you give them?
Oh, wow. God, if I looked at myself back in the day, I think I would say be yourself, be true to yourself, just enjoy what you're doing right then and now. So I, you know, as an example, I've got a niece who's 25 and she's got this incredible 20-year plan, and I just feel like you need to sometimes appreciate the job that you've got, enjoy the job that you got. Take everything you can from that job that you got. Enjoy your life. We've got, you know, when we start in our 20s, we've got a, you know, 50 years to go, 45 years to go. Just be present, enjoy yourself. You know, make mistakes. To this day, I make mistakes. If we didn't, we wouldn't be human. And it actually, what it does to my team when I do make those mistakes, what it shows to my team is that I'm human. And another day, the next day is a new day. Learn from those mistakes. Learn from the people around you, from your bosses, from your colleagues. You'd be incredible, the stuff you pick up from people. One of my most influential people was a colleague of mine back, you know, when I was 20. He was just, his word of advice to me was, be a grey man, do your job, head down, bum up, and people will notice you. You don't want to be the white, you don't want to be the black, you just want to be somewhere in the middle. Just enjoy yourself. Do you need a career path? It certainly never worked for me. That's not to say that it won't work for you, but just enjoy yourself and enjoy the present day, because you wake up one day and you're 45 like me, and you just go, wow, incredible.
Magda, thank you so very much. Incredible, powerful advice. I've got to say, so many notes for me to take away for my own reflections. And I just want to say a really big thank you. You have been so generous, not just with your time, but in how you have shared so openly. I want to say I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Michelle. You're incredible. Likewise, thank you for involving me in this series. I've really I loved every moment we spent together. So a big call out for you, Michelle, because although, yes, you get to facilitate these events, you're an incredible woman, and I'd love the opportunity to interview you one day.
Oh, Magda, thanks so much for your kind words. You're such a powerhouse. You're one to watch. You are going to be running the largest networks in Australia and or the world, and the world maybe one day. No, seriously, I'm really looking forward to seeing how your career journey pans out.
You know what? I don't think I get speechless, but you've just made me speechless. So thank you.
I love that, Magda. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Women Who Move Nations. And to all of our listeners out there, you've been listening to Magda Robertson, the General Manager of Torrens Connect in Adelaide, South Australia. Thanks for listening to this episode of Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast. We have 20 other episodes for you, so if you haven't checked them out already, please do. I'm your host, Michelle Batsis. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for listening. Thank you to everyone for listening to this week's episode of Women Who Move Nations. This series is co-produced by Cassandra Kadelka and Lara Rudd, with copywriting by Sophia Dickinson. Please join us each week as we raise the voices of women in the public transport and mobility sector. I'm Michelle Batsis. Keep safe and keep our nations moving.